Hello and welcome to Clever Content, a podcast from Content OD, a content agency based in Sheffield. This is where we talk about content related news, events and other information. First off, we talk about how we ourselves keep up with all the content related news, events and information. We're talking tools, services, websites. I'm joined today not by Tom, who's been with me for the last couple of episodes, but Richard Tissinton.
Hi. You struggled to say that then.
Well, I know. I was reading that out, I was anticipating saying your name and remembering that I'd made a fuss about what to call you last time. So I just went for the full gambit, but said it in a strange way.
Richard Tissington.
So we are going to talk about, we've got coffee. You might have heard Rich just taking a little sip there. First topic, and potentially the only topic in this episode, but I think that's okay, is keeping up with the content world, really. So how do we do it? Is it worth it? What are the reasons people do try and keep up with the industry? That kind of question. So I think it's only right that we start off by fessing up about how much we ourselves keep up with the content industry. Is that a specific enough question for you, Rich, or do you think I need to be a bit more?
No, right? I think it makes sense. I think it's a tough one because it's something I think we should all do a little bit more. If you create content, then you know you should be proactive in looking at what's out there. I think I use social media a lot still, and I'm not someone that's kind of coming away from Instagram or Facebook or Twitter like a lot of people are at the moment. I'm still within that world, and naturally you end up consuming content without looking for it. You know, you're constantly targeted with adverts and videos, and I suppose you're targeted in specific areas depending on your interests and what you look at. But I haven't escaped that. So without even looking for it, I'm consuming stuff all the time and looking at new trends and learning all the time just through my own use of content and social media.
It's almost inevitable. You don't necessarily have to go looking for it. You just, like, we're all so consumed by content these days that it just kind of happens naturally.
Yeah, and whether it's online on your phone or whether you're watching Netflix or Prime Video or TV, I think when you work in a creative agency and you're creating content, then you do start to look at stuff differently and you do start to take new approaches on and new trends on, and you think, oh, how can I apply that to some of our work, or how can I change that a little bit to fit in with that brief? So you're constantly consumed and exposed to new stuff just by watching and consuming media or content. So you don't really, for me, I don't feel like I have to go out and look for or search for it, because like I say, I'm just constantly taking stuff in anyway just by being on those platforms.
I mean, you could argue being on those platforms is your way of keeping up with the industry. I realise you're saying it's almost a byproduct of being on there anyway. But, you know, you could always choose to not be on.
Yeah, things. And I think a lot of people now are doing that, even in our world where we create campaigns and content for social media and for those platforms. There are so many people now that are trying to escape it because it is addictive and it is time consuming. You know, a lot of my friends now are taking note of their screen time app, which tells you how many hours you spend on your phone every day. And it's frightening, actually, when you go on there and see that you've spent, you know, 3-4 hours on your phone. That might not all be Facebook or Instagram or messaging or whatever, but, you know, it breaks it down for you. But it is frightening when you actually see that figure and then you actually review and think back, God, yeah, I have spent a lot of time on my phone today. So yeah, it's not unusual for people, even in our world, to be coming off of those platforms and escaping social media, but I'm not one of those people yet.
I think ultimately, I do think it's important to keep up with your industry, and I think particularly your niche. So you're a filmmaker, can I call you that?
Yeah, it sounds glamorous. Yeah, well, I'll go with that.
That's why I chose it. And I'm a word champion. I chose that too. But you know, if you have a specific niche, then I think it's probably more important to be aware of what's going on with what you do specifically. But it's always a balance between that and delivering client work, isn't it? If you work in an agency or if you freelance or whatever it might be.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think it is important that you're always going to be focused, like you say, on your area. And you probably take things in without even realizing it. You know, being an editor or filmmaker, as you put it, you do, you know, you will notice a bad cut or you will notice something that jars. And you might not say anything or, you know, highlight it, but in your head, you're thinking that was poor or that was really good. So you're definitely, even without knowing it, you know, you're kind of taking stuff in all the time and applying it to your work.
As in you're constantly getting better at your whatever it is that you do, just because just the act of doing it is actually good at training and good.
Yeah, and just consuming it as well, like say, like.
I think there's definitely something to be said for experience. I know when I was a younger man and I was just started out working in my first agency, and you know, I felt so out of my depth, extremely out of my depth. It was all, you know, even just the world of like client work and having to do things to deadline and being under that kind of pressure and still having to be creative in some way. I really struggled with that at first. And just because it was so new, but the way that I got better at that kind of thing was I just sort of plowed my way into anything I could find online, just reading up about, you know, techniques or how agencies work or anything really. I need to learn this. No one's going to teach me this very quickly. And if I don't do anything now, then I'm not going to be here in 6 months because I'm so far away from having that kind of experience. So I was taking in quite a lot. I was always trying to keep up with what was going on in the content industry. I was reading copywriting blogs. I was totally immersed in that kind of thing. Outside of work, more than inside of work, really. And I also just started making stuff outside of work as well. So like set up my first blogs, did my first podcast, all that kind of thing. Just because it was like, if I don't do this, I'm not going to figure it out. Whereas now, a tragic 15 plus years on, some of that stuff just comes naturally. So I don't necessarily need to learn how to be a copywriter because I've done it for 15 years. I know it sounds fairly obvious, but there is definitely, with experience comes a less of a need to be absolutely up on all the stuff that's going on in your industry. At the same time, though, stuff does change. And I remember, again, this is a long time ago, but I remember working with a team of lovely designers who, you know, the internet was long since in existence. This is not like, you know, the 80s or anything. But there was definitely a move from being a print designer to being a web designer. And there was lots of people who were print designers or graphic designers who were now being asked to design websites. And they could, you know, they could design really nice websites that looked fantastic, particularly in Photoshop. But what I kind of noticed was that those people had no inclination, and I can understand why, but they had no inclination to really understand how a website works. You know, they didn't know how to code or even understand, you know, the basics of HTML, CSS, that kind of thing. And that was kind of fine for a while, but you could kind of see as things developed on the web and it became more and more interesting, you could do more interesting stuff. Like that need for someone who understood how things actually worked became more and more apparent. And a really good example would be something like responsive design. So, I mean, it seems so normal now for us to pick up a mobile phone and a website to look different to how it does if you were using a laptop. I know this is really old school content talk here, but when that happened, there's not just one sort of size. It's not like someone's designing for like a big computer and a mobile phone. There's lots of different screen sizes, and there's certain like technical knowledge that you need to understand. You need, what sizes am I designing for? How do people actually use mobile phones? Like a whole like world of knowledge that people who had been working on this stuff as former print designers or graphic designers for years, you could see that it was like a struggle, and that need for them to learn new skills and understand more stuff was like just very clear to me. I didn't really say much, you know, because, you know, got to be polite, and I was junior and I'd have probably been told to get out of town. But it was a real clear example of when you need of like a need to keep up with your industry and to have some idea of what is changing whilst it's changing, as opposed to 2 years later when it's too late.
Yeah, I think there's always subtle changes, and there's always changes in approach to kind of style. And before I get onto like the technical changes and things like that, as to where you really do have to, you know, learn new skills in terms of editing or how you manage media and things like that, I think the thing that's constantly changing is an approach to a style. So it's a bit like fashion, how that changes constantly, and you can quite easily be out of touch with that. And suddenly you're wearing a top that's 4 years old, and you actually look at it and you think, this is no longer in fashion. And I think the same applies to video. If you're not careful,
I have felt like that before.
I always feel like that.
I just kept wearing it for another 10 years and waited for it to come back.
But it's probably similar to writing. The foundations are already there, and you might not need to learn new skills, but you do have to make sure that you're keeping up to date with trends and fashion, because it's just the subtle changes, and you do have to adapt and you do have to keep track of those, because otherwise, yeah, you've got a video that looks 4 years old if you're not careful. And it might only be subtle things that you're changing and adapting, whether that's even as something as subtle as a font, or the way that you present text on screen, or the way that you frame it, or, you know, the aspect ratio all of a sudden looks modern and looks new to be square because it's suiting Instagram and that format, whereas 10 years ago that would have looked old. So I think, would you say the same applies to writing? It's almost like it's not just skills that are changing and adapting. You're having to learn new skills and you're having to learn new software and new applications, but actually it's really important that you're up to date with the style and the trend.
Yeah, well, even just something simple like writing for social media, all of a sudden you need to be really adept at putting together extremely short sentences and conveying a lot in very little. So that was, you know, that's a big change that's happened over the last 10 or 15 years. But I think the Instagram thing is a really good point. And it's not just Instagram. Vertical video is now extremely common. And I imagine there are more vertical videos produced than horizontal ones. Forgive me, I know, I realise these are not the technical terms, Rich. You know, the uppy-downy ones?
The uppy-downy ones, yeah, that's the technical term.
People love those.
Yep.
And, you know, if you were just sort of sat at your desk just cracking on for the last five years or so, just, you know, pumping out your side-to-side videos, you weren't aware of what was going on in the... I know this is unlikely, but you weren't aware of what's going on in the world and the way that trends change, then, you know, you would soon find yourself with problems. But also, one of the reasons that you probably would find out, as opposed to just carrying on for years, is because a client would ask for it. And there's nothing more upsetting than a client coming to you, especially if it's face-to-face, and saying, oh, can you do this? And you're thinking, I've never... What are you talking about? I don't know. Don't know how to do that. Or sometimes arguing against something, which can happen. So you asked about writing. So I think there are web pages and I don't know, apps all over the world with copy that's been written for them. And almost all of them, I would have thought, have had very little user research. We talked about this in a couple of episodes ago. Might even have been last episode. But it's people don't ask the audience what they want or they haven't previously. And so it's only in the last few years that that's become more of a thing with the content design process. So the idea that before you even begin to write, just actually find out what people really want from your content. Are words the right way of doing it? Or could you sum up what you are trying to say with a button or a form or whatever it might be? So again, the idea that things generally change for the better. So being on top of what's happening is usually a good idea because things will change for the better. So knowing those things is usually a good idea. The other reason I think it's a good idea to try and stay on top of what's happening in your particular industry, in the content industry, is I think it's nice to feel part of something. I think I would find it very difficult to just be, or boring almost, just to be coming into work, writing my stuff, and then going home again. I think it's nice to feel part of like a wider community of some sort, whether it's a community of writers or content marketers or filmmakers, podcasters, whatever it might be. And the idea that whatever you've learned, like sharing it back in some way, whether it's just through a blog post or maybe even a podcast like this, I think there's something really positive about that and helps keep you on your toes. But also, if you're willing to share what you've learned, then it's in some ways it puts you in the mindset to accept what other people or to take on board what other people are sharing too.
Yeah, because we work with a lot of freelance filmmakers and camera operators and editors now. So we're all constantly sharing ideas and different pieces of content that we've created. And I think it helps to push each other as well. So, you know, it's not that you're competing against each other, but you want to make sure that you're all, you know, on a similar standard. So you will share ideas. And, you know, I've recently shared some grading tip with one of the other camera operators in Premiere. So yeah, it does. It definitely keeps things interesting. It does make you feel like you're part of a community, because when you're just constantly focusing on a screen, it can be quite boring and it can be quite lonely. So yeah, definitely. I can see where you're coming from there. And I think that probably applies more to you as a freelancer as well.
It's true. So how do you keep in touch with those people? We're going to talk about tools and websites and stuff like that at the moment. But when you say you've shared that stuff, is it just like with direct colleagues, the people that you work with in person, or is it, you know, on the web?
So it's generally in person. I'm not someone that will go on a forum and share advice or answer questions.
Do you use forums or social media or anything like that to find answers to questions, as opposed to...
I think you have to sometimes, especially when you're editing something, you get an error or a render issue, you end up going and scrolling through pages and pages of answers and questions and answers. I think the reason I've never asked a question, because there's so much snobbery around those sites, I've found.
Really?
Yeah, you ask a question and it's almost like a lot of the answers, they'll give you the answer, but they'll give it you like a really strict school teacher telling you you should already know this. Why are you asking it?
Yeah. I mean, that goes for any internet forum in the world, isn't it?
I think so. I hope so. But yeah, I've never actually asked a question. I've always found it already asked, I think, online. But yeah, the answers are often just so harsh. Just give them the, if you know the answer, just give them the answer.
Yes. Well, maybe that's just forums. So I don't tend to frequent forums of any kind, really, these days. But I what's wrong? What's that laugh for?
Don't know. Just the way you said that, it made me giggle.
Mm. So I don't frequent any forums really these days. But I do use, I still use an RSS reader. Ever used an RSS reader?
No.
Sorry, do you know what one is?
No.
Okay, let me share it.
This is when you can be really harsh now with your answer. If you want.
I'm going to be.
You can take on that persona.
An RSS reader, goodness gracious.
Maybe I have. Tell me what it is, maybe I have.
Google Reader used to be the most commonly used RSS reader. It's basically, instead of having a load of sites that you really like and going to them all to get the latest blog posts or information, then you subscribe to them all in your RSS reader, and all of those posts, kind of, whenever there's a new one, goes directly to the app or the web app or whatever it might be that you're using. So common ones these days are Feedly, Feedbin, Feed Wrangler, I think, and then there's loads on, you know, iOS and Android and what have you. But it's a good way of really keeping up with the latest stuff that's being written, particularly. So if there are a few blogs that you like, rather than having to go to them all individually, if you subscribe in a feed reader, you can check your feed reader whenever you want, really. But let's say once a day, just to see if there's anything in there that's particularly relevant to you or to your industry or what you do. And then, you know, you can read them in there, or you can highlight them or share them. There's usually quite a lot of the old functionality these days. I use NetNewsWire, which is an open source free one. It's just been, it's a very, very old one. It's been out for many, many years. They've just released an open source version, so that's free. And that's kind of a good way of keeping it with like more of like a news type of thing. And I know that Tom uses this, and I've used this when we put together like curated newsletters and that kind of thing. It's a good way of just sort of getting a load of stuff into one place and then checking it. You mentioned social media earlier. I think following the right people on Twitter is always a good idea in every circumstance, but particularly if you're looking for either inspiration or just to see what other people are writing about in your industry. So for me, content designers, content strategists, people who work for companies that are known for that kind of thing, like MailChimp or Adobe or, Facebook, lead content strategist at Facebook, good person to follow on Twitter, that kind of thing. And then Twitter lists. You a Twitter list person, Rich?
No.
Okay. I was going to say, what's your favourite Twitter list then? I thought you were going to say yes.
I'll be honest, Twitter is probably the one that I have stepped away from more, because I'm not interested enough to be posting on Twitter.
Well, it's a big time suck, isn't it? And there's lots of bad stuff on Twitter that's not related to the content industry.
Yeah.
But it can be useful if you curate your experience. So if you follow the right people and stick them in a Twitter list that says something like ace content people, and then just read them, that will help probably, although it's pretty hard to avoid any kind of politics because we're all talking about it at the moment. So following the right people on Twitter is good. Listening to the right podcasts.
Yeah.
Big podcast fan, Rich?
I'm getting there. Last couple of years, I've started to listen to more and more podcasts. I'll be honest, it'll be more like based around my hobbies or my interests away from work. But I still think they're useful things to listen to and appreciate, because although the subject might not be cinematography or editing or producing video content, it's still a podcast, and they're still offering some sort of insight into something else, and they're using techniques and new techniques within that podcast world. So it's a good way of keeping track and learning new podcast skills.
Yep, absolutely. And you can pretty much get a podcast about anything these days. So there are lots of content strategy podcasts and writing podcasts. And again, yeah, you can, it's very easy to make your own as well. So if you don't want to write 1,000-word blog post every week, you can just, you know, stick a microphone in front of yourself. It's very easy, this podcasting business. And join that community. Webinars, conferences, that kind of thing. You big webinar man, Rich?
No. It's very easy making a podcast, but not...
Do you work in the content industry?
Not that easy when I'm involved. No, I'm sorry, and I'm not a big webinars person. Right. I'm too busy editing to be watching webinars.
I've made that point at the start, and I think that's absolutely fine. I think it's, you know, ultimately the most important thing is to do your job, and it's, again, I said, it's true. I said at the start that when I was more invested in needing to learn and needing to feel like I was on top of things, a lot of that stuff I did outside of my job, because, you know, I did have to, you know, when you're at work, you have to do your job, unless someone, an employer is prepared to say, yeah, just spend 2 days every week just on the internet looking at stuff, like doing research. That's very unlikely to happen. I don't do a lot of conferences, partly because I've got small kids and you have to be away and all that kind of thing. But webinars these days are pretty good in the sense that you usually get a recorded version afterwards and some resources and that kind of thing. And you can pick and choose. It's not like you have to turn up every week. You can pick and choose subjects that are all right for you. Same goes with podcasts, actually. Just because, you know, a podcast has 50 episodes, it might be that there are two or three that are actually about what you're interested in. So you have to do a bit of digging. But it feels like there is more and more content available for content people to try and find and sift through. But I recommend sort of looking for people rather than shows or blogs or that kind of thing. If you can sort of like handpick a group of 5 to 10 people who you trust and you enjoy their writing. So it's not just a case of, oh, well, the information is good. You know, if you actually enjoy the way that they write and the personality and all that kind of thing, I tend to try and find those people and follow them rather than worry too much about where the content's coming from and all that kind of thing.
Would you say you're someone that outside of your working life, do you try and avoid content or certain bits of content that relate to your working life? Because there's a lot of people out there that love their job, but when they're not at work and they don't want to consume or learn, they want to learn when they're at work. Would you say you're that kind of person, or would you say that you're someone that can quite happily take work home with you?
I think I'm the latter, but I think it also depends on how you look at your work. Like, I can completely understand people who just want to have a complete separation between the two. But I've always been the sort of person who just likes making stuff, really. So any research that I do, any kind of reading around a subject, it's usually if I'm trying to figure out whether I want to do something. So like an idiot, I've spent the last 3 months researching newsletter delivery services. So stuff like, you know, MailChimp and Substack Review. I could give you a whole lot of good bits. I can give you a long list of these services and how they work and all that kind of thing. But it's because I've been looking at, this is away from my work life, of paid subscriptions, like newsletters with a paid subscription, how that kind of works. So I've done all that outside of what you would call my actual day job, just because I'm interested and I know I'm looking at making something outside of the day job. But it's those kinds of things, and again, this goes back to what I said earlier, that kind of research, already in the last 3 months, it's come up with clients, and I've been able to use the stuff that I learned outside of work and talk about it and talk about implementing it in the day job too. I'm getting quite confused now whether I'm talking about my day job or not my day job, but I think that's kind of my point, is that for me, I find it quite hard to separate the two. But it's partly I've just been interested and curious.
And I wonder if being a freelancer for a long time encourages you to be like that, because you might not have set working hours unless you're very strict with yourself. You might, you know, work whenever, really.
That's true. That is definitely true. But I was kind of like that anyway before. Oh, dear. I think that's probably about it.
There's one thing I wanted to talk about, which it's more on the technical side of stuff when you talked about, so not necessarily, we've said this word too many times in this podcast now, but it's not necessarily the content, but the technology that you're using. So when you talked about web designers using coding and whatever web designers use, that there was an interesting thing that happened quite a few years ago now where everyone that I knew that was producing video content, and I can't really talk for broadcasters, but in the more kind of online content, video content world, we're using Final Cut 7 to edit and put out their videos. And then when Apple changed it to Final Cut 10 or X, however you want to say it, Pro.
Final Cut Pro, I think it's just called Final Cut Pro now, isn't it?
Right. But when they changed it, I think this was back in like 2011 or 10 or something like that, everyone switched to Adobe Premiere because they just changed it too much. It went from looking completely alien, and people didn't want to change how they edit, change how they run their post-production suites. So they moved over to Adobe Premiere. So that was quite interesting because you do have to keep track and you do have to keep up to date with new technology and new software. A lot of people just stayed on Final Cut 7 for like another 5 years.
I remember there was uproar.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone was furious because it was Apple had made it simplify the interface, but in doing so removed quite a lot of features that the proper pros like yourself, Rich, might have used.
I think they tried to simplify it, but in the process really complicated things, because if I ever try and go into iMovie, which is obviously the really basic editing package now that comes with, I think it just comes as standard on a Mac, I find that really difficult. I can't edit with that.
Isn't this not just a case of you know what you know?
It is, and I think that's probably what I'm getting at. I think that things do change gradually, and there are subtle changes that you've got to keep up to date with every update. You know, there's a little change, but I think if they try and rewrite something dramatically and change something overnight, then it doesn't always go to plan. People will stay on the old application or move on to another one.
In this case, I think Apple financially will probably be okay.
I don't know. I hope so.
Well, they were. This was about 10 years ago, yeah. Sadly. So
we're talking about current trends and new technology, and we end up talking about one that changed 10 years ago.
A lot of what we've said was hot news in 2006.
Oh, dear.
Right, that's enough. If you want to subscribe to the show, which is obviously a very sensible thing to do, you can do that in Apple Podcasts. That's where most people do it. But you can also go to whatever app particularly takes your fancy. We can recommend Overcast on iOS. There is Pocket Cast, which is on Android and various other platforms too. You can even do it in places like Spotify these days. Imagine.
Crazy.
I know. We always accept feedback. We'd love to know what you think about the show. Just send all that to info@contentod.co.uk and we'll have a good look. You can also get in touch for any other reason too and go to the website, find out more there. That's contentod.co.uk. And if you go to /podcast, there is more information about the podcast specifically. There's also all the previous episodes too. You can get stuck into there. I think that's it, Rich. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.